right, y'all. Welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/scotthortonshow. All right, you guys on the line, I have got the great Phil Weiss. Welcome back to the show. Phil, how are you doing?
Good, Scott. How you doing?
Man, I'm doing good. I've been wanting to talk with you about this. Everybody, you know Phil. He runs Mondo Weiss at mondoweiss.net. Nice new website, by the way.
Thank you.
It very much.
Thank you.
And it ain't just Phil, who is such a great writer, but he also has an entire stable of people worth reading over there. I don't know, a dozen or more or something. I don't know where he finds them all. But there's so much important Israel-Palestine everything, politics and in Israel and, you know, Israel lobby politics in the United States and every aspect of it, and really great stuff. And
thank you.
So I admit, I'm sorry, I forget if I admitted this to you before. I got what Biden's got and I can't remember things anymore. But I had to unsubscribe from your morning email because I was spending all morning reading all of this great stuff, and I just can't. I had to. I'm going to get back to it at some point, but I got to get my book done first.
You got.
It's just too good. It's too engrossing. It's so interesting. And it's so terrible. And just God dang it.
Yeah.
I'm glad that you understand. Thank you for understanding.
Absolutely. I completely respect. You got to set your boundaries in this world because you know there's just not enough time. So
I know. That's the one thing, man. It's just that 24-hour limit on every day. Just that hard
break,
you know, every time.
You know, it gets to be, it's 11:30 or midnight, and I think, oh, my God, I haven't, you know, had a moment's breath. You know, I don't know. Who am I to complain?
We're all going to die at our desk like Jude Winiski. I'm telling you right now, man. I know it.
That's crushing. Oh, that's scary. I'm out of here.
Good old Jude. Listen.
Yes.
It's crack up time. We've been talking about this. It's the biggest deal in the whole wide world, man. And I just want to get a couple of the premises out of the way here so we don't got to, you know, spend too much time rehashing the whole thing.
Okay.
The Palestinians and the American liberal Zionist, mostly Jewish, but not necessarily all Jewish Zionists, were promised that there's going to be a two-state solution. The Palestinians are going to get the West Bank and East Jerusalem and the Gaza Strip, and they'll have their own independent state. And maybe it won't be an all-the-way state, but it'll be like about 90% of one. And it's going to happen here sometime real soon now. And they've been putting the Palestinians off and liberal Zionists off with that argument since the very early 1990s and getting away with it. And really since Camp David even, right, in late 79.
Yes.
And so, but now that is just over because even though the Israelis are kind of slowing down on the outright annexation program thingamajig, it's too late. For PR purposes, their announcement that they were gonna has already flipped the script for enough people and including, and very importantly, Peter Beinart, who's a very important liberal Jewish writer of the Generation X age, who wrote two books about how sorry he was that he lied us into war with Iraq, which, you know, if you lied us into war with Iraq, I'm mad, but you write two books about how sorry you are, okay, I mean, okay.
But, good career move, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm willing to hear the man out. I do respect him. You know, I disagree with him a lot. I do respect him. But he wrote a thing called, "That's it, forget it, I give up, oh no." And so now he says that there should be a one-state solution with equal rights for everyone and has essentially, he didn't mention him. I don't think, he may have linked to him, but he essentially now has the same position as Ali Abu Nima. That it's time for one state with equal rights for everybody, and importantly, don't worry, other Jews reading this, it will be okay, rather than, oh, it'll be another Holocaust and all this. He takes on all those arguments head on, but so this is symbolic of this crack-up that you've been writing about, which has been taking place in slower motion, but it seems like it's a quickening now, and it's really kind of coming to a head, and so now I want to hear what you think of just the kind of overall temperature of the discussion, not just the reaction to Beinart, but just the overall storm going on in liberal Zionism over the end of the illusion of the two-state solution, Phil.
Okay, Scott, I will answer you, and very directly, and I have a lot to say. But I first need to ask you, you know, you did a wonderful job of summarizing that. I thought that was just a wonderful summary, and you have the 30,000-foot view, which I don't. You know,
well, I thought
ground.
That I went on way, way, way too long.
No, you didn't.
Rambling.
You did a great. So, where are you reading? Where are you getting your information? Generally,
I read the Beinart piece. I read the Beinart piece,
wow.
And
wow.
I talk with Ramsey Baroud, you know, relatively often. And mostly, I talk with him about Palestinian issues rather than. How American Jews feel about things, but American Zionists for that matter, although that's part of it. But I think, you know, the annexation and the deal of the century and all that, and we've spoken about this before.
Yes.
It's clear that it's going to come to a head. And Peter Beinart, I mean, this should be said if I wasn't clear about this, is he hung on for dear life, scraping fingernails all the way down the well until the very last minute. He just absolutely cannot do it anymore at this point. This is the all the way end of the rope for him.
Yeah.
And so,
not all the way,
but
the
so that
BDS
seems really important. Like he really is a thermometer for measuring how other people feel about things. And the reaction to what he wrote seems important to measure how other people feel about the same situation.
Got it. Thank you. Okay. You know, you're just good at this. I reflect. I just got a hats off on summarizing this in a pithy fashion. Okay. I would like listeners to note, we are generous to people who supported the Iraq war who say we made a mistake. You know, the fact that you are so generous to this guy and I am generous to him, we respect the fact that he has apologized. That's just by the way. I just want to. So the David Frums of the world, the Tom Friedmans of the world, you know, this is why they have our disdain. They created this just massive problem. I mean, just a global problem, you know, through an error of judgment, and they shouldn't have their jobs so long as they maintain they fail to account for what they did. That's by the way. Okay,
totally agree.
The one thing in your summary is that just another minor point. Liberal Zionists held the bag for the two-state solution for the last 25 years. And in that period, during that period, we have heard a lot of Palestinian intellectuals and Palestinians on the ground, including Ali Abu Nima, an intellectual, saying, hey, this is apartheid, a two-state solution. This is what the South Africans wanted to get in South Africa. They wanted to be able to separate the Palestinians into these sort of fake states. In South Africa to get the blacks in.
You know, I really wasn't very clear the way I said that, because I should have said, you know, the two-state solution was intended to put off the Palestinians and American liberal Zionists. The Palestinian people never really bought it, but the American liberal Zionists did, and that was what was more important. But I didn't mean to imply that the Palestinians were successfully put off by this. They knew better, of course.
Scott, you're the last one to get bogged down in the weeds, and that's one of the things, reasons I love being on your show. This is not the weeds in that I, too, the American establishment and good liberals or lefties like myself, we also bought into the two-state solution. We thought that this was going to deliver some type of peace and, you know, accommodation. And, you know, we were wrong. The American establishment is still clinging to the two-state solution. I happily gave up on it, you know, 10 years ago or so. But God knows that, you know, this was an article of faith in the American establishment and in foreign policy circles around the world that this is going to resolve it. And when Ali Abu Nima was saying 15 years ago, hey, it's one country. You can't separate these peoples at this point. And the Israeli settlement enterprise just reaffirms that fact. Liberal Zionists denied that belief, have continued to bludgeon people like Abu Nima, anyone who says this, for many years. And one of the good things about the Beinart collapse is that now he's getting bludgeoned by liberal Zionists. You can't say this, you know? And so I think your overall summary is absolutely accurate. This is a great moment of crisis for liberal Zionism and indeed for Zionism. This article of faith is being challenged by a former acolyte of this, and actually a priest of this faith. Peter Beinart, I've heard him, and sat there as he would debate Yusuf Munayyer, a leading Palestinian voice, and saying, "Hey, binational states don't work. You can't get these people to live together. Look at Belgium. Look at Czechoslovakia. Look at former Yugoslavia. You can't get these people to get along. You have to have partition." And Munayyer said, "We got to do better than that." And now Peter Beinart is echoing Munayyer. He's saying, "We got to do better than that. This is my vision. Look, we got to do better." And one of the amazing things that's happened here, again, I think it's there are great revelations that are occurring around this, is that you have all these liberal Zionists saying, "No, we need separation, separation, separation. The people can't get along. Separation." Very white citizens council from the Jim Crow South 50 and 60 years ago, including saying, "Hey, the Jews, the Israelis have too much money and the Palestinians are too poor. You can't mix these populations." So very right-wing conservative arguments in favor of separating these two populations. And here you have Peter Beinart actually being a good liberal. And I think it's a great moment in that, I mean, it's a horrible moment in that Palestinians have been saying this for a long time, completely ignored. I've been saying it for a long time as an anti-Zionist Jew, completely ignored. That's, we didn't choose to be in the establishment, so that's the price. But now you have an establishment figure who has said, "Enough, enough, Roberto Duran, no mas, no mas."
Yeah.
And, it's good. It's good. It's a discursive collapse of Zionism. And it happens, not to go on too long, but as you pointed out, annexation called the bluff. All this, the realization that Israel is just a right-wing society. They have elected Netanyahu over and over again. Netanyahu says, "Let's annex the West Bank." This society, Jewish Israeli society, which is formed by Zionism, is right-wing nationalist. It's equivalent in many ways to white nationalism in the United States, which has a bad name, I believe. Mm-hmm. And so Jewish nationalism does not have a bad name, but it should, because it is right-wing ethno-supremacist ideas that should be appalling to anyone in the United States. And Netanyahu's continued reelection has sort of called the bluff of these, has made it impossible to hold on to these delusions for Peter Beinart and for others too. So you see that in these liberal Zionist organizations, a lot of their base, the street in these organizations, is now mutinying and saying, "Hey, leadership of these liberals, when are you going to do something? Israel ignores you. You've beseeched them for years. They laugh at you. When are you going to actually call for cutting aid?" Scott, we both of us harp on the fact that our country gives close to $4 billion a year to this country in military aid. No strings attached. So the ultimate question is, how does this affect U.S. policy? And how does it affect the mainstream discourse? And it hasn't affected it much lately. I mean, Joe Biden, who may well be the next president of the United States, he's going to his right. He has to go to his right on this issue, just as Bill Clinton went to the right of George H.W. Bush in 1992 and defeated an incumbent president in 1992 by going right on Israel and going, he's a Democrat, supporting settlements at a time when George H.W. Bush was challenging settlements and he became president. Right now we see Joe Biden going to the right on, we can't have the word occupation in the Democratic platform. I am not going to get out Israel by Donald Trump, certainly not in Florida and certainly not for the donor class. Yeah. So,
which is, in fact, like scientifically impossible, right? I mean, what could he possibly, what else could he, he's going to give them an aircraft carrier or two? Or,
yeah, maybe he would give them, do they have nukes?
Yeah, give them, well, they do. And plenty of reason to believe they got H-bombs too, but.
And the nukes came from Lyndon Johnson, with his, it was on his watch many years ago, so.
Hold on just one second. Be right back. So you're constantly buying things from Amazon.com. Well, that makes sense. They bring it right to your house. So what you do, though, is click through from the link in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org, and I'll get a little bit of a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. Won't cost you a thing. Nice little way to help support the show. Again, that's right there in the margin at scotthorton.org. Hey, y'all, check it out. The Libertarian Institute, that's me and my friends, have published three great books this year. First is No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. He was the best one of us. Now he's gone, but this great collection is a truly fitting legacy for his fight for freedom. I know you'll love it. Then there's Coming to Palestine by the great Sheldon Richman. It's a collection of 40 important essays he's written over the years about the truth behind the Israel-Palestine conflict. You'll learn so much and highly value this definitive libertarian take on the dispossession of the Palestinians and the reality of their brutal occupation. And last but not least is the great Ron Paul, the Scott Horton Show interviews 2004 through 2019, interview transcripts of all of my interviews of the Good Doctor over the years on all the wars, money, taxes, the police state, and more. So how do you like that? Pretty good, right? Find them all at libertarianinstitute.org/books. You need stickers for your band or your business? Well, Rick and the guys over at thebumpersticker.com have got you covered. Great work, great prices, sticky things with things printed on them. Whatever you need, thebumpersticker.com will get it done right for you. Thebumpersticker.com. Now, so it seems important, and this is something that I think Beinart didn't say, and I read the long version in Jewish Currents, wow, too, is something that I think he didn't really articulate well enough, but it seems really important here. And I'm not exactly sure if this is an area of disagreement between you and I or not, but at least theoretically, there was a time when they could have given up the West Bank and let the Palestinians go and let them have their state. And I think that should needs to be the point, is that you could have let them go, but you wouldn't. You wanted their land so bad, you kidnapped them too. Now you're stuck with them. And so these are the breaks. But you got to be able to put the responsibility and the cause and effect in the right place.
I completely agree with you.
The whole thing of it is, in other words, the reason he changed his mind is the collapse of the two-state excuse. So you got to reiterate that, well, the excuse is expired. That's why I'm here, right? Yes. This is what happened.
Brilliant analysis. I completely agree with you. And let's review this. Let's review the fact that you have a quote-unquote intractable conflict between peoples. Yes, I regard it as an intractable. And what is the largest concession that occurs in this 100-year history of Palestinians refusing Zionist colonization of their land, as we would resist settler colonial colonization of our land? Immigrants coming in and taking our land, taking sovereignty. And what was the greatest concession in this long battle? It was in 1988 when the Palestinians said, guess what? We won't fight. We will take a state on 22% of the land. Just, I mean, one of the most remarkable concessions in the history of modern world history. Accepting you take more than three quarters of this land that we think is ours, and you can have your state, and we'll have our state. And regardless of how full-throated that embrace was, it has been embraced again and again by Palestinian leadership, and these hubristic, entitled dicks, in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv thought, no, we want more, and the United States will support us. And they were correct, sadly, in the view that the United States would support them. But they could have taken the money and run. If they had accepted a Palestinian state back in the 90s, when this was supposed to happen, they would be in a far different place than they are now in terms of world opinion and where this is headed, and in terms of the BDS movement too. They would be able to buy off liberal opinion and say, hey, they have a state, Palestinians have a state, they have sovereignty, and no, they didn't accept it. They didn't accept it. They wanted more. And in terms of hubris, they just thought, hey, we can continue to take as much land as we want, and someday they'll get a little Bantustan and we'll call it a state. And guess what? It may have backfired on them. And that is a wonderful thing in my view.
Yeah. Well, and back to the thing that I spaced out on earlier that I wanted to say was you brought up the election of 1992, and I wanted to mention to the audience that Phil has written at length about H.W. Bush and how he crossed the Israel lobby and how he blamed the Israel lobby for his loss and how there was real substance to that. And there was more to it than just Clinton attacked him from the right and it worked. It worked very specifically in terms of money and media coverage and, you know, I guess I'm not sure what all in terms of power in Washington, D.C. And in terms of evangelical support for Bush, which was turned against him, which DeLay later used against W. Bush, that you better back off Ariel Sharon, pal, or I'm going to tell the evangelicals that you're a lot more like your dad than we thought, and you don't want that.
You have mentioned this to me before, and that's in your book, too. I think you have that in your book.
Yeah.
The Fool's Errand book.
You know, at least I have Powell back. Oh, I do. Yeah, I do, yeah.
Okay, so because you told me that, and whoa, DeLay said that? I checked it out. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so let me just quote one
that's
other
in. I got
writer.
That from Mearsheimer and Walt. That's where people can find that, is in the lobby. Okay. It's in the essay and in the book.
Well, let's bring in another great writer. In addition, you know, Tom Friedman has said, I can't stand the guy, but he said, he's the best witness on this whole thing. When he said a few years ago, George W. Bush said, because my father lost, we're not going to be out Israeled again. Right. And that's what he did in 2000. He got Sheldon Adelson behind him and he, you know, shut down the peace negotiations that Bill Clinton had been undertaking. And it went against his own conscience, such as it is. I think George W. Bush actually believed in greater fairness here. And that's partly why he gave Condoleezza Rice her head, you know, in 2006 or so, very late in the game, to do Annapolis, and nothing came of that. And Elliot Abrams went nuts. But
that was against Powell's advice, too. And Powell was saying, who was the Secretary of State and was General Powell and all of those things with all of that stature. And he was telling him, look, Bush, your approval rating is 1,000,000% now since September 11th happened on your watch. For some reason, people just love stuff like that, I guess. Anyway, they love you, and you can now do whatever you want. And so this is the time. You know, we've got to get the Israelis to give up the West Bank. It's such a major cause of Arab animosity against the American people. Among the regimes we want to obey us, and among the civilians who join terrorist groups to slaughter our civilians. This is a real problem. And Bush said, okay, pal, let's do it. And then said, okay, Tom DeLay and Ariel Sharon, sorry for offending you. I didn't mean it. And told Powell to back down, and that was it. It was over.
Is that in your book?
Yeah. That is. Yeah, the Powell part is in the book.
Okay. Thank you. Because I didn't know
it's
that.
It's in chapter one.
You know, it's true and obvious. That this is something that has hurt America across the world and in the Middle East. I'm looking it up in your book right now. So the question, I don't take much, you know, Ali Abu Nima said this week, Palestinians don't care what Peter Beinart, his shift. He's being a little dismissive, but it goes to the point that this is a little, it still is inside Jewish baseball, inside the Zionist community. This is a major betrayal. And how long before it resonates in the mainstream, I don't know. Liberal organizations, Zionist organizations like J Street, Peace Now, are doing everything they can to shut Beinart down and say, hey, this is meaningless. We disagree. Israel Policy Forum. We believe in separation, 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 you know. So it's still the canary in the coal mine, kind of. Right.
It's page 10, by the way. Bottom
I'm
of page 10.
I'm looking at it. I just found it same time. Yeah. Wow, that's good. Okay.
Control
that's
F
great.
Does wonders for you, you know, when you need stuff. So let me see. There was a thing that I was going to bring up.
Go ahead. I mean, I got to ask you, I mean, what about the fact that annexation didn't happen July 1st? What do you take from that? You know, Netanyahu said, we're going to start annexing July 1st. Nothing has happened. The reports from the Israeli media are that They can't get Trump on the phone right now. They can't do it without Trump's backing. And Trump is not, he's got a lot of other things on his plate right now. And the Israelis just will not take a move without the green light from Washington. And there's some suggestion that the Trump administration itself is split over this, with the Jared Kushner wing being moderate and on the question, relatively moderate, and David Friedman, the ambassador to Israel, wanting to go full speed ahead.
Yeah, you know, in Bolton's book, I guess the reports were, I hadn't read the whole thing, but the reports were that Jared Kushner prevented Netanyahu from talking to Trump when Trump was planning on meeting with Javad Zarif. And he thought that that was unseemly, that a foreign leader would tell Trump who to meet with or not when it comes to other foreign leaders. I thought, all right. Good for old, you know, I thought the entire reason he was there was to protect Israel's interests, this kid. But good old Jared Kushner standing up to Netanyahu. How do you like that?
Yeah.
Just a little bit. Just a little,
Kushner,
but hey.
Kushner, who fired me, you know, 15 years ago or whatever, over these issues. Even he has a line. I just got to say, Scott, you have a hard job. You told me you're reading Bolton's book. You told me you read all of Peter Beinart's essay, 7,000 words. You know, that's hard work. So,
Well, I'm way behind on a lot of things. So if that makes you feel any better. No, and Sheldon's book is coming out. And you know what? Let me segue into Sheldon's book then. We talked about this just before the show. My partner at the Libertarian Institute, of course, the great Sheldon Richman, and his previous book is Coming to Palestine, a collection of his essays all about Israel and Palestine and why he's a one-state equal rights guy himself, raised Zionist and now no longer. And I know you've read that great book. And his new book is called What Social Animals Owe to Each Other, and it might be out by the time people hear this. I'm not sure. It should be very soon. It'll be coming out here for the, at the Libertarian Institute. We'll be publishing it. And it's a collection of essays from going back 30 years or however long, 25 years or something, just about libertarianism and about how individualism and liberty works. And, you know, I don't, I'm not trying to convert you to libertarianism and individualism necessarily as a philosophy right here, right now, but I'm just saying that his point of view, I think, is a very powerful one. And it seems to me like it holds a lot of instruction for the Israel-Palestine situation now, too, where when even Peter Beinart says we have to reimagine Zionism to mean that, well, Jews can live in the Middle East. They don't necessarily have to have a Jewish state. That, that you know what? That's really right. And if the only purpose of that state, and not that Sheldon is a minarchist, but we do live in a world of states, so all other things being equal, if there is a state in Israel, Palestine, whatever you want to call it, if its only job is protecting the rights of individuals to be free and do their job, and to its only job is to be their security force, essentially, and nothing else, then it shouldn't matter if Jews or Palestinians have the majority in the Knesset. It shouldn't matter, you know, even if, you know, when it comes to the shrines, obviously everybody has to share open access for different civilians to come to the religious sites and that kind of thing. All that's self-explanatory. And then nothing else should really be anything to fight about, what the textbooks say or anything else. Let people work that out on their own. Write your own damn textbook. Read whichever one you want. You know, and, and so liberty is the solution to problems here in our society and for Israel and Palestine, too. They forget all this ancient tribal stuff. It's not about Jews and Palestinians. If anything, it's civilians versus their government. That should be the real way that everybody looks at it, I think. And then if, and in fact, from the Israelis' point of view, if they would really scale back their state, then they wouldn't have to worry so much about if Palestinians took control of it, right? You know, it's like Jacob Hornberger likes to joke about, like, oh, no, what if the Russians took over America and then created the IRS and Homeland Security and all of these things that we already have? These terrible tyrannies that we already suffer under, you know?
That's funny. Yeah, I mean, my own response on that is partly, you know, what is Zionism is a form of identity politics, you know, a huge form, massive authoritarian, militarized form of identity politics. And look what a giant error it is. And look at all the resources that pour into they live in a terrible neighborhood. Yeah, they live in a terrible neighborhood in good measure because they went in and expelled 750,000 Palestinians. And they didn't like that, the Palestinians, who didn't get to go back to their homes. So, you know, that's what identity politics can create when you create a state that's devoted to it. And look at all, again, look at all the resources. Look at all the money that they spend on the army. Look at what happens, how many of their children die, let alone Palestinian children. I mean, their own kids are getting, you know, destroyed by this system. And yeah, imagine a system in which, you know, everyone had equal rights. Wow. So that's where Sheldon and I think would really agree. Yeah. You know?
Well, and that's what's so great about it. Like in this piece, I'm sorry I didn't mention the title at the beginning, I meant to. Liberal Zionists use arguments that echo white nationalists. And the quote is, yeah, there's no equality between us and the Palestinians. And this guy, and they really do sound like 1950s, 1960s Southerners trying to hold on to the old order of segregation. But, you know, so here's the thing, too.
And those are liberals. Those are liberals I quoted.
Right. Sure, yeah. The labor side, as opposed to everybody else who are further to the right than them on the same issue. In other words, even worse in that sense, on the same issue of nationalism over the Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I read a thing. It wasn't the Times of Israel. It was kind of a right-wing Israeli type site where they were criticizing Beinart. And the criticism was that he, and they're really angry, and that the quote was that, you know, he needs to admit that he is talking about trading. He is prioritizing Palestinians, you know, in brackets, their very lives, right? Their very lives and right to their own lives and freedom and property, right? He's prioritizing the Palestinians over Jewish comfort and Jewish, thriving or some kind of thing, Jewish privilege. I forgot the exact word that he put, but it was that blatant. It was like our rent seeking that we're getting away with is being threatened here, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah. It's tragic. It's tragic what's happened to my people. You know, Sheldon and I agree on that too. You know, Sheldon is kind of like a former Jew. He's being a libertarian. I don't think he believes in religion that much, you know.
He is an atheist. Yeah.
Yeah, he's an atheist. Okay, but you know, look what it's done to the Jewish people that they that we've fallen hook, line, and sinker for this nationalist ideology. It's really sad. It's just sad. It's tragic.
And
tragic.
It's the kind of thing that sounds completely crazy coming out of somebody's mouth too. They're like, "You're trying to trade my comforts for somebody else's rights? Are you crazy?" Like, no, you're crazy. Self-evidently. Yeah. I mean, what are we talking about here? It's the same thing. I love the quote. I'm sorry I'm redundant. Poor audience that's heard all these interviews. The famous Jefferson quote from probably Notes on Virginia, where he says, "We have the wolf by the ears, and we can neither safely hold him nor let him go." But the thing is that he's not a wolf. He's a human man. And you don't have the right to hold them by the ears. And so if you get bit tough, you're the one who put yourself in that situation anyway. And there's no reason to think that he's trying to bite you anyway. Just let him go. You just won't do it. You pretend like you're the one in danger. But look at, you're the slave master. You know?
That's good, Scott. You're good. You can say that again and again when you're talking to me because I like it.
Yeah, man. All right, so one more thing is this, man.
Yeah.
And I'm really not sure what to think about this, Phil. But it's something that... the way that Beinart puts it, and as seriously as he takes it, really made me think about it again, that he says that he knows that outright apartheid, as in annexation, two states off the table, tiny Bantu stands with no independence or power, and just total occupation and subjugation, that won't work. He knows it won't work. Everyone knows it won't work. You're talking about half the population of Israel at that point. With no rights
or
whatsoever.
More.
And he says that he doesn't even think that that's what anyone has in mind. He thinks that what it'll obviously come to is expulsion. That once they're done stealing the land, that then out come the boxcars and ship them all off to the east for Lebensraum.
Yeah.
And that this would be absolute hell on earth. And that is what he is trying to stave off, is a trail of tears here, rather than permanent apartheid. He's, you know, obviously expulsion in his view being even worse. And so I wonder if you think that I have to say, that sounds right to me. And that's why for a long time I was kind of a two-state guy. It wasn't anything about just right and wrong. It was a utilitarian thing that I just thought the Israelis will kill you all before they give you equal rights. Or that's they will expel you all and watch and laugh as you drown in the Jordan River before they give you equal rights. Maybe don't push them. You know, I don't know. But I wonder what you think about that.
You know, I think that Beinart knows Israeli society and knows how right-wing it is and knows how racist this society has become and knows what Zionism has done to the Jewish people. He's going to get there. He hasn't said some of these things. He's still a Zionist. I'm adhering to this and that. You know, he's not for BDS yet. He's going to have to be because he is describing a society that is really tough and brutal and not that appealing. And that is the large block of right-wing Israeli society, which keeps, as I say, re-electing Netanyahu. He knows that. And yeah, those people believe in that kind of thing, happily pushing these people into Jordan.
So you think that is a real danger?
Yeah, it is a real danger. And you know, Scott, I'm ashamed to admit it. I have to go find that now in Beinart's piece because I should do a piece about that. It's a brilliant spot. Yeah, you know, if that's his motivation, you know, rather than just apartheid's bad enough. Yeah, ethnic cleansing. Yeah, they've done it before. They've been doing it all the time, slow ethnic cleansing.
Yeah.
So,
well, the objection is, how could they do that? That's just so crazy and such a bridge too far. But I'm thinking, you know what? I don't know. Sink a couple American boats in the Far East, and then while nobody's looking, do whatever you want.
Well, Scott, I see I
mean, I'm not saying the Israelis would sink American boats, but I'm just saying wait till something happens, something big happens somewhere else.
Yeah, grab the distraction. They've done it before. I have to read that Beinart piece more closely.
Oh, man, I'm sorry, because it's like 7,000 words long.
Yeah, I know.
But, so back then to the beginning. Is this a real bellwether? This is, you know, waves of panic, or it's just, you know, one
waves
more guy
panic.
Who's kind of seen the light?
I'm an optimist. Zionism is collapsing from within. All the attacks from outside don't matter. Jews are seen as the special pleaders here. Mm-hmm. We have our lobby. We have our special place in American society and in world opinion because of the Holocaust. We are granted special rights from that. I understand why that happened, and yet now even the Jews are turning on Zionism, and that will give other people permission to turn on Zionism.
Well, and then so back to Joe Biden, the self-proclaimed more Zionist than anybody's ever met or whatever it is, and trying to outflank even Trump, who recognized the seizure of the Golan and moved the embassy to Jerusalem and has this crazy deal of the century and all that. But also not just Biden, but then his party. And the entire progressive, is it half or two-thirds of the party? The entire left half of American politics has really been radicalized. Everybody's moved a couple of clicks to the left over there. So there's a real crack up that, unfortunately, because of the virus and everything, we're not probably going to be able to get to see it really play out in a street fight at the convention. But but it is a real problem inside the Democratic Party at this point, isn't it?
Yeah. I think the base is going to rebel on this question. I hope they do. I mean, the party leadership is trying to say, no, we're staying right on Israel. And the base is saying, no way. And let's have the fight out. Right now, Biden is riding roughshod over him. You know, he'll talk about immigration. He'll talk about climate change. He'll talk about minimum wage. Talk about Medicare for all. I'll deal with you, Sandersites. We ain't talking about Israel. So that you're getting too close to the crown jewels of the Democratic Party.
Right. All right, man. And I know you got to go. So everybody, that, of course, is the great Phil Weiss. Thank you very much again for your time on the show, Phil.
See you soon.
Appreciate it. And this article is Liberal Zionists Use Arguments That Echo White Nationalists. The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.